We'll be mining some of the audio from our Issues Etc. listener comment line. The number for that comment line, and you can leave any kind of comment you want to. It doesn't have to be, I love you or I love the show. It can be, I hate you or I hate the show, which we do occasionally hear from listeners, as long as they keep listening. 314-505-7825 is the Issues Etc. listener comment line. It's just for you. Leave your comments there. You can leave them anonymously as well. Now, one thing I noticed about these comments, Jeff, that we went through this morning for the Issues Etc. comment line was that, how do I say this? The comment line has become, in many ways, or at least it's in the process of becoming, also a way that our listeners contribute to the conversation. It's not just someone saying, hey, I wanted to react to this, or hey, I wanted to disagree, or I wanted to agree, or what did you mean by that? It is, they actually have substance that they are adding to the conversation, just like they do when they call in.
Well, you know, you always say that we have the smartest listeners in radio.
Absolutely.
And we were listening. By the way, it wasn't this morning. I wasn't in here this morning.
Well,
I need
true.
To figure out how to take a half day off because the babysitter for my kids doesn't get there till
well,
2.
Well, it was this afternoon, and I have to say, I was feverishly finishing up my article for the journal this morning at home because I try writing around here with you next door. Nothing gets written. The number of words on the page actually reduces when I try to write around
well,
here.
Have you figured out how to take a day off the new system, this computer system?
No.
How to do it?
Well, I do. I've gone about a half mile into this labyrinth of stuff you've got to do that used to just require writing a few numbers on a sheet of paper. You know, old school, you could actually look at the paper, make sure that you did everything right, aren't worried that you just took all your vacation days and by typing the wrong number, those kind of things, you know. But not yet. No, not yet. Haven't figured it out.
But getting back to your thing, the smartest listeners in radio, I mean, when you listen to these comments,
I don't see how anybody
can argue with
absolutely
you.
No doubt about it. It's amazing. Now, a prime example of this is Issues Etc.'s own Paul Harvey, Harry from Arlington Heights, who has raised contributing content to this show to an art form, one which he actually does very, very well.
This is Harry of Arlington Heights reflecting on military pullouts. With politicians, parties, and pundits positing the advisability of a military pullout from Iraq, there comes to mind a poll taken from 6 young Army officers 59 years ago in 1948. When Japan surrendered on August 15, 1945, Russia had been in the Asian conflict only 6 days. They had crossed the Korean Yalu River against the Japanese on August 9th. The same day as the surrender, it was hastily and arbitrarily agreed that Russia would accept the surrender of Japanese forces in Korea north of the 38th parallel, and that Americans would accept surrender south of the 38th. Unilaterally, Russia rendered the surrender line political, erecting an iron curtain. As the Russians armed and trained a North Korean army, in the south, the Republic of Korea ROC Army was trained by Americans, World War II Far East Army of Occupation. I was an officer in that army, on the ground, in Korea, when the ROC Constitution was adopted on July 17, 1948. 2 weeks later, with my unit, I personally collected and guarded ballot boxes from villages along the 38th parallel in Korea's first election of the century. By August 15th, Syngman Rhee was sworn in as the first ROC president. Just as word came from FECOM, Far East Command Tokyo, that our army of occupation was to pack up and pull out. Later that week, I was having an evening beer with 5 other young officers, talking about the pullout order. I took an address book from my wallet and turned to a blank page to record the answer to a question around the table, which was, how long do you think it will be until we go to war with Russia? The six answers ranged from 5 months to 5 years. Not one of us doubted it would come about. And it did. On June 25, 1950, that day a proxy Russian invasion by North Korea with Russian advisors and Russian arms, including T-34 tanks and MiG fighters, surged across the 38th parallel, overwhelming the ROK forces. By then, Americans had pulled out under political pressure, although it had been militarily inadvisable. Within 5 days of the invasion, Truman's order to MacArthur had Americans back in Korea to support the ROK Army. Back in the States, with the World War II GI Bill, I had squeezed out 5 semesters and a college degree before Truman's telegram reactivated my reserve commission. Before long, I was back in Korea for the war. Barely more than 3 years after I had taken that poll of 6 young officers on the ground, 100% convinced that there would be a war. Histories on Korean War all start with June 15, 1950, but that was only when it got hot. Soldiers on the ground were sure it was already in the works 2 years earlier. Had America not pulled out in 1948, there would not have been the hot war with over 33,000 American dead and over 103,000 American wounded. Back home, I was pallbearer for Lieutenant Ken Reamer, who graduated with me from the University of Illinois, but took a mortar in his trench the last week of the war. The voices of the soldiers on the ground were ignored. I endorse civilian control of the military. Truman's sack of MacArthur was correct. However, I urge that we listen to what our soldiers on the ground and their commanders in Iraq have to say before the politicians, parties, and pundits engineer an ill-advised pullout. Thank you.
All right, that's Harry from Arlington Heights from our Issues Etc. listener comment line. Wise words, and I must say, very timely, by the way. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Just listening to some of the comments that our listeners have left on our Issues Etc. comment line. Here's a caller from Vermont who disagrees with something. Now, this is when you know the cross-pollination has begun, when someone who's left a comment on the comment line and then had it played on the air elicits further comments from others who leave their comments on the comment line and they get played on the air. I don't even know what to call that except cross-pollination. This caller is from Vermont. Disagrees with something that Harry said last week about fundamentalism.
Hi, this is Bob from the wilds of Northeast Kingdom, Vermont. Harry of Arlington Heights' commentary on fundamentalism seemingly makes the common mistake of conflating the various meanings of the terms fundamentalism and fundamentalist. Some of the dominant voices in our culture paint with a broad brush fundamentalist, those who consider the Holy Scriptures as the ultimate authority for Christian faith and practice. The term fundamentalist goes back a century to a series of essays written by various conservative Protestants who sounded the alarm about contemporary challenges to Orthodox Christianity, ranging from those of higher criticism from Germany to Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses. Indeed, at least one author, Princeton's B.B. Warfield, believed in theistic evolution. I recently heard a recording by sometime Issues ETC guest Dr. D.A. Carson, who mentioned that in a certain respect, namely holding to a high view of scriptures, I believe, he himself would be considered a fundamentalist. The The media love to group together as fundamentalists Christians who believe that Jesus is God's unique way to salvation, along with Muslim jihadists. Please show more discretion when you use this F word on the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Bob. Again, good thoughts. See, this is what we're looking for with the Issues Etc. listener comment line. People who are listening, taking to heart what is said either by us or by our guest, or in this case, by other commenters on the comment line, and offering their two cents as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issuesetc@kfuo.org. By the way, one thought on leaving your comments on the comment line. Jeff, I'll let you explain this. Certain kinds of phones, and I'm talking here about speaker phones, cordless phones, especially cell phones, don't always work so well on the comment line. We really do have to, I have to actually do a lot of very complicated sound processing to some of this to bring it up to the proper level. But we run into this with guests.
Well,
throw
that into, we have an archaic phone system downstairs, I think from, 1950s or something, that we have to use. We don't get to use the fine state-of-the-art phone equipment we have here in Studio A, so we're using a production studio with some very, very, very outdated phone equipment. So throw that in with a cell phone, cordless phone, speaker. If possible, please don't make your comments using those. We do the same thing when guests come on the show. We ask that they don't use a cordless.
So the bottom line is, if you've got a phone with a cord on it, which is rare indeed, or a really good cordless phone, that's the best way to go if you're going to leave it, and you want people to be able to hear it.
Yes. But cordless phones are iffy. Now, sometimes the cordless phone can be better than a non-cordless phone. Is that the proper term?
You know, the very best phone we ever had in the world broke every rule. It broke every rule. It was, what was the guy's name? Zimmerman?
Yeah, the guy used to be president at Concordia University of Chicago.
Dr. Zimmerman came on to talk about that great book what was the name of the book? It was the book of the month last year.
The Battle for the Bible and the LCMS.
Yeah, and he came on to talk about that. He's the author of this great book of
Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.
And we did interview after interview with him. And we kept on commenting how great his phone was. It was like he was in a studio someplace on ISDN. And then we found out, near the end of all these interviews, that it was actually a cordless phone, and he was using it as a speakerphone. He broke all the rules, but he had the best sound there ever was.
Wouldn't it be great if we could find out what that was and then ask all our guests to go out and buy one?
It would be, but it's not going to be.
Did you ever think we'd do in this Issues Etc. listener comment line, we'd have listeners responding to other listeners? The comments, like we just had Bob responding to Harry, something Harry said last week on the Issues Etc. listener comment line.
Knowing our listeners, yes. I wouldn't have predicted it, but I'm not surprised by it. 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Next caller comes from Florida and is reacting to our interview. Was this the interview that we were where we talked with Alistair McGrath about Richard Dawkins? He's reacting to this interview and had some thoughts on this McGrath-Dawkins conversation dealing with atheism.
Hey, Pastor Wilkin, this is Ken from Orlando. Thanks for the show on atheism. I enjoyed listening to your conversation with Dr. Alistair McGrath. Atheists like Richard Dawkins assert that evolving man invented the God of the Bible, but they must answer why that God is so often rejected by those who supposedly created him. Another question for Mr. Dawkins is, why would man create a God who strikes terror in sinners who are confronted with his holiness? How does evolution account for the idea of sin, or explain why men like Isaiah and Peter cower in shame when in the presence of this God? What is the evolutionary benefit in that belief? If evolution is true, then sin doesn't exist, and man doesn't need a savior. Then why would man write a story that this all-holy God invaded our world to save us from our sin and did so by hiding himself in the flesh of an infant? It's hard to imagine evolution being the source of any virtue, especially humility. And yet this God lives the life of a humble carpenter, not a life of fame or celebrity, but one of quiet obedience to his own law, fulfilling it for us. If survival of the fittest is true, then why write the script that this divine Messiah lays down his life for the forgiveness of the world, and does it through crucifixion, which was one of the most shameful and humiliating forms of execution in the Roman world? And why have the story end with a resurrection, which was first witnessed by women, who, according to Dr. Paul Meyer, were not allowed to testify in a court of law because their testimony was deemed unreliable? Evolution tells the story that the deaths of millions of beings benefits the relatively few of us who now survive. Christianity tells a totally different story, that the death of one, of God himself in the person of his son Jesus, benefits eternally the billions of people that he brings to faith. In baptism, Christians share in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, and are then enabled to live outside themselves for others. Evolution works only if each being fights for his own survival. As sinners, we would never invent the God of Scripture. He is too holy, too close, too personal, too loving, too forgiving. In our sin, we run in fear from such a God. But that's exactly who we need and who we have in Jesus Christ. And I pray that this message, which creates faith in the hearts of those who hear it, would break through into the hearts and minds of people like Richard Dawkins. Thank you.
All right, Ken, by the way, if you're listening, or if you listen to this on demand at some other time on your iPod, the invitation stands. Send us, email us with some information about yourself, and I want to send you an I Have Issues t-shirt. Now, I usually reserve that only for people who join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, or for people who have the best comments during Soundbite of the Week. But that was one of the best. You know what I've discovered, Jeff? This is what I've discovered. And this has taken a bit of wind out of my sails, and it's not allowed me the kind of secret pride that I'm accustomed to. You tend to think, you sit behind this microphone, it takes a certain amount of skill, some kind of expertise, and there's some sort of voodoo to doing good radio. Callers like that, listeners like that, who are able to say what he just said with that kind of clarity, he probably made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 points, all worthy of discussion in and of themselves, prove that it doesn't take a genius and it doesn't take a rocket scientist, and there's certainly no magic voodoo in doing good substantive radio. I almost want to say anyone can do it, although I know that not anyone wants to, but it kind of makes me wonder, why is somebody like that, who's obviously so well-grounded, so smart, listening to us? If God is the invention of our fevered minds, how does evolution explain the fact that so many reject him? It's a great question. If religion, and Christianity in particular, is just any other religion that's evolved in our minds, no real substantive truth to it, if you were inventing a religion, wouldn't you leave sin out of the picture? I mean, if you had carte blanche to invent your own religion, why would you have something like sin? He made the point, if evolution is true, sin doesn't exist. I'd never heard anyone make that point before, but it's absolutely true. If evolution is true, then sin doesn't exist. A universe without a God is a universe without sin. Everyone does what is right in their own eyes, and it really is, as postmodernism tells us, everyone gets to invent their own truth. I think the upshot of his comment is, evolution can explain all sorts of religions, Islam, Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, paganism, animism, even atheism. Evolution can explain all of those religions. It cannot explain Christianity. If we were making it up, why would we make up the kind of religion that Christianity is? All right, time for one more caller to our Issues Etc. comment line. She's from Mississippi, and she has a show suggestion, which we also welcome.
Hi, this is Susan in Tupelo. I really enjoy Issues. I've had a busy summer, and I'm catching up through the archives, and thank God for them. I'm interested in, perhaps in a future broadcast, some talk about the LSB, the Lutheran Service Book, that many of the congregations have been using this past year. I'd like to know not only how people are responding to it, but how it came about, how some of the hymns, those restored verses to so many hymns and the restored language, how this came about and why some hymns are in and others are out. comparing to the LW. At any rate, I think that would be an interesting program. As I said, I love this program. I encourage listeners to contribute. Thank you. God bless. Bye.
And thanks for the comment, Susan. And thanks for listening to Mississippi. Well, I think it's a good suggestion. I have a lot of the same kind of questions. I do. She's talking about the Lutheran Service Book, which is the new, you want to call it a hymnal, but it's not really a hymnal, that the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod just recently put out. I can't answer the question about how it's being received very well, very, very well. But as to the other questions, they're beyond my expertise. To have a show on it might be a little inside the beltway, because not everybody who listens to us is Lutheran or pretends to be. But thanks for the suggestion. Steve is calling from his car. Hi, Steve.
Hey, I'm going to stroke your ego.
What's that?
I'm going to stroke your ego.
All right, be careful.
Yeah, I know. But you're a Texan. You can handle it. A couple of things I think Issue has said is really good about it. First of all, your variety of subjects. The second of all, many times it's a dialogue. And what I find is that when I'm writing a piece like Extreme Theology sometimes, a lot of times the things that come to mind are things that you've talked about, or when I'm teaching a Sunday school class. So I think what happens is you guys are touching on things you just don't hear elsewhere on the radio. And that's why I'm seeing that there's links to KFUO issues, et cetera, on Christian blogs in Australia and New Zealand even.
Wow, that's nice to hear. It's very nice to hear. And it's very kind of you to say those things, although I can't take credit for the breadth of guests or topics that we have. I mean, that credit goes really in two directions. One, to the producer of the program, Jeff, and the other, to the guests. If we didn't have the guests, we wouldn't have the breadth of topics that we do. So, but thank you very much. It's nice to hear, and it's nice to hear that people are seeing a need for it elsewhere. It's amazing to me. What amazes me, almost to the point of staring off into space in a catatonic state, that's how profound my amazement is that someone would want regular old, plain old, vanilla, let's not talk about anything that gets anyone upset, let's not talk about anything that anyone might disagree on kind of radio. Only in Christian radio do you hear a call for that kind of thing. Did you know that? Only in Christian radio. In regular radio, talk radio, why is it that Rush Limbaugh has been so successful? Because he's talked about things that other people considered verboten before. Now it just seems like it's ordinary stuff because of the success of talk radio. But only in the realm of religion do we want to say, oh, come on, let's not talk about that. People disagree about that. That's controversial. I think Christians of all people need to take on the controversies, the disagreements, and the touchy subjects. Take them on with both hands. Grab the bull by the horns. That's part of what makes issues, etc. Tomorrow on the program, we'll be talking about faith alone. Pastor Stephen Parks will be our guest. He wrote an awesome article in Modern Reformation magazine on that subject. And Carlton Pearson's Gospel of Inclusion, some would call it universalism, Bob Hunter of the Christian Research Journal tomorrow. When we come back, we'll talk about the secret.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Why do future pastors need to know the original biblical languages of Greek and Hebrew? Here's Issues, Etc. regular guest, Dr. Jeff Gibbs.
It's a lot of trouble. Why bother going through all that difficult learning? And the answer is easy and twofold. First, because the pastor as an under-shepherd feeds God's people with the nourishing food of his word. And when you know Greek and Hebrew and study the scriptures in depth, you can offer God's people the nourishment that they need. Second, the under-shepherd has to spot poisonous food. And by knowing the scriptures that well through the study of the original languages, you can spot false teaching and harmful teaching and protect God's people from such teaching. These are the reasons why we study exegetical theology.
For more information on Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne or Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, look for their logos at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
September 11. Why did it happen?
Answers with Ken Ham.
president of the Ministry of Answers in Genesis, which is proclaiming the authority of the Bible from its very first verse. Ken, we all know why the towers of the World Trade Center in New York City were destroyed on 9/11 a few years ago, but what do you mean here by why it happened?
Well, it's true about the terrorist attacks directed at the Twin Towers, but that's not the ultimate reason as to why this terrorist attack happened. Let me say something that might startle people, and I want to be careful. You see, I visited the site in July, and it really was quite moving. But what happened at the World Trade Center in 2001, in reality, is no different to what happens every day and in every country of the world. You see, each day, evil people do evil things, and many die. It shouldn't really be a shock to learn that these horrible things happen and people do die. You see, because we're all sinners, being descendants of the first man, Adam, death and suffering is now a normal part of this abnormal world. And ever since Adam sinned, people have suffered and died. You see, death is the penalty for sin. That's why each person needs to be ready for death, to have faith and trust in Jesus Christ, the Son of God, who died to pay the penalty for our sin.
Are you aware that the Bible actually provides the account of the true history of our earth and universe? Thus, the exciting topic of one of our free booklets written by Ken Ham, and it's available on our website free at AnswersRadio.com.
Many of the Christ-centered programs that you hear every day on AM 850 KFUO are made possible by the generous giving of friends like Richard and Peggy Rickley of Collinsville, Clarence Roth of St. Louis, Lucille Lavecamp of Jacksonville, Illinois, and Stanley and Susan Hammond of St. Charles. Your faithful support for AM 850 KFUO ensures the future of our radio ministry.
Here's a day trip the entire family can enjoy. Saturday and Sunday, September 22nd and 23rd, attend the 2007 reenactment of the Battle of Fort Davidson at Fort Davidson State Historic Site, Pilot Knob, Missouri, just 20 minutes from Farmington. See demonstrations, listen to live music, browse the reproductions of items from Victorian and Civil War times, and walk among the military and civilian camps to learn about life in the 1860s at Fort Davidson State Historic Site. September 22nd, 23rd.
Lace up your shoes and join the Walk for PKD Sunday, September 16th at Tower Grove Park to raise money to fight polycystic kidney disease, one of the most common life-threatening genetic diseases that affects over 6,000 people and their families in the St. Louis area. All proceeds benefit research to find a treatment and a cure. Registration for the Walk begins at 10 a.m. The Walk starts at 11 Sunday, September 16th at Tower Grove Park. For information or to register, go to St. Louis Walk at pkdcure.org.
You are God in a physical body. You are spirit in the flesh. You are eternal life expressing itself as you. You are a cosmic being. You are all power. You are all wisdom. You are all intelligence. You are perfection. You are magnificence. You are the creator, and you are creating the creation of you on this planet.
That's Rhonda Byrne, author of the book The Secret, reading from the same book. It's a bestseller. It's not just a book. It's also a DVD. How do you explain its popularity? Could it be that Oprah Winfrey endorses the book? Yes, but she's endorsed other books too, and they haven't taken off like The Secret. Can you explain not only its popularity, but the fact that people don't just read it for entertainment or a little bit of enlightenment here and there? They read it and it becomes a way of life for them. We're going to talk about The Secret here in the last half hour of the program. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. You're listening to Issues Etc. live this Tuesday, the 11th of September. Our call-in number is 1-800-730-2727. Or 505-7850. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. James Walker joins us. He's president of Watchman Fellowship, based in Arlington, Texas, and co-author of the new book, The Truth Behind the Secret. James, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Great to be with you.
Are you surprised that The Secret, both book and DVD, became bestsellers?
Frankly, I am. I mean, to maybe hit the New York Times bestseller list, you know, we've seen this before, you know, books like The Celestine Prophecy, But this was a real shock to hit number one. Simon & Schuster, the publishing giant, actually sold out of the first edition, and earlier this year put in the biggest reorder in the history of their corporation for 2 million new copies, and over 1.5 million copies just of the video have already sold. So, yeah, I'm frankly quite shocked it's this popular.
What about it surprises you?
Well, the popularity surprises me. It does a very good job of disguising the spiritual roots of it. Celestine Prophecy was pretty obvious New Age. You just pick it up and it becomes fairly apparent. What the Celestine Prophecy did over a decade ago is it simply took New Age doctrines and teachings and put them into a novel. Kind of like what Da Vinci Code did last year with some of the Gnostic concepts of Christ. So it just simply popularized it in a fun-to-read story. What's happened with The Secret is Rhonda Byrne has taken these New Age doctrines, disguised them as scientific principles, and then built it up as a great conspiracy. And what she alleges is that this secret that she discovered in 2004, that she was able to trace it back and find that all the world's greatest thinkers and most prosperous, wealthy people in the past have known the secret. Plato, Beethoven, famous people in history, but wealthy corporations and billionaire tycoons conspired to keep this from the general public. So with her documentary, The Secret, plus her book, she's going to supposedly rip the veil from the from this conspiracy and let everybody know this secret that's the answer to everything. It's every human yearning, unlimited wealth, prosperity, perfect health, mended relationships, even world peace. All of this is in this so-called secret.
Do you think that Rhonda Byrne really believes it?
I think she does. I mean, I'm not God, and I can't know someone's heart. But just watching her on the interviews, of course, reading her book, watching her documentary, I think she really does. She claims that in 2004 she was at the end of her rope. She was almost broke. Her father had just died, divorced, just in desperation. She said her daughter gave her an obscure 100-year-old book. Now Rhonda Byrne is simply at this point just an unknown television producer in Australia, but her daughter gives her this obscure 100-year-old book. She reads it, and then it was so life transformational. When she gets to the end, she claims with tears running down her cheeks, she wonders, how could I be 50 years old and never learn this marvelous information that she learned from this book? And of course, that's what started her on the quest of the secret.
What was that book, by the way?
Well, she doesn't let you know until later on. She eventually reveals it was a book by Wallace Wattles called The Science of Getting Rich. And in our book, The Truth Behind the Secret, Bob Waldrop and I, we go through and actually track back these ideas. They don't go back to Plato. They don't go back to Beethoven. But they do go back to 100 years ago, not just to these people like Wallace Wattles, but also to the entire mind science religions, Mary Baker Eddy, Christian Science, Ernest Holmes, the Church of Religious Science, and also, most notably, the Unity School of Christianity with the Fillmores.
So is there anything new in Rhonda Byrne's secret?
No, it's just how it's presented. Now, what we found out in our book, we document the fact that there's actually two versions of the secret. The original, very few people have seen. In fact, earlier this year, it was going for over $100 on eBay if you could find one. In the original edition, a woman named the woman who's basically the star of the original version, Esther Hicks, is actually channeling a collection of spirit beings that she calls Abraham. These disembodied spirits are the real source. We discovered Esther Hicks and her husband Jerry have been channeling these spirits and taking them on tour in hotel ballrooms, on cruises in the Caribbean, Alaska, Hawaii, and channeling this secret for actually over a decade. So Rhonda Byrne basically negotiated 10% of the profits of The Secret to get Esther to come on and channel these spirit beings on camera for the original version. Now, what happened was there was a falling out between Esther Hicks and Rhonda Byrne, and Rhonda Byrne said that she was going to have to relinquish all of her royalties. Now you're talking millions of dollars. Relinquish her royalties or she would be edited out of The Secret Project. After consulting with the spirit guides, the Hicks decided not to relinquish their royalties, and they were edited out. Now, what has happened is the version that people see now, which is called the Extended Edition, the one that sold 1.5 million copies, it doesn't look religious. In fact, it has a scientific slant to it. Byrne argues that science, especially quantum physics, is now proven scientifically the principles of The Secret. And but when you watch the original, it's very clear that this is a religious message and it's not biblical.
So let me just get this straight. This is the first time I've heard this. The original documentary slash whatever you want to call it, DVD of The Secret, which is no longer being sold except in places like eBay, actually has a woman purporting to channel spirit beings.
Yes, her name is Esther Hicks, and she's not just appearing. She's basically the star of the original edition. Now, again, when people buy the current one, and this is the one that's so popular, people are doing secret meetings in their homes. There's all these blog sites, fan sites all over the Internet about The Secret. Most of these people have never seen the original. The original is channeled information. And the one that's out now, the popular one, all that's disguised. You have to really look hard to find the spiritual, especially in the last section, do you get the spiritual part. The Secret, by the way, which is, again, we track this back to over a decade-long channeled information from Jerry and Esther Hicks. The Secret is summarized in three words, and we'll go ahead and tell the listeners so they don't have to go out and buy The Secret. The Secret is actually three words: thoughts become things. Rhonda Byrne calls this the law of attraction. And what she alleges, the secret to everything, is that your mind, and she says science has proven this, it's not true, but she claims science has proven that your mind, every time you think a thought, that thought is sending out frequencies. You can measure the frequencies of a person's thought, and those frequencies are going out into the universe, and the universe must, by this law, manifest whatever you are thinking. So if you're worried about bills or debt, the universe hears that like a genie, like Aladdin's lamp. The universe says, your wish is my command, and sends you more debt. However, if you change the way you think and think positive thoughts, think wealth, prosperity, if you start thinking, especially if you can tie your emotions into it, the universe, she says, must send you everything you've ever wanted.
Now, we've done a number of shows on The Secret, and not only the local show, but our national program as well. And you read through the book, you see the universe, the universe, the universe, especially in Rhonda Byrne's part. Who is the universe? Is this another word for God in some sense? Or does she simply mean, in a scientific sense, universe means all that there is, sum total of matter and energy in the universe. What is she talking about?
Well, it's pretty clear, especially by the last sections of her book, that she is giving a metaphysical definition to universe. She's coming from a worldview known as pantheism, that God is everything and everything is God. So in that sense, the universe is God, but God is impersonal. She does not hold to a personal God that you can communicate with. However, this universe is, for some reason, even though it's impersonal, is benevolent and can be very helpful if you tap into the power, and will, by this law, manifest to you or send back to you whatever your thoughts and emotions are focused upon. And so there's all kind of anecdotal evidence and stories in the book and on the Internet, people that claim it works, that have been able to be healed of cancer, be able to go from being homeless, jobless, to being millionaires using the principles of The Secret.
We're talking with James Walker, president of Watchman Fellowship, based in Arlington, Texas, co-author of the new book, The Truth Behind the Secret, about the best-selling book and DVD, The Secret. We're coming to you live this Tuesday, the 11th of September, 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850, our call-in numbers, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. How important is, now most people who've read this book would be shocked to find out that channeling and channeling spirit beings and spirit guides really forms the genesis of the whole secret phenomenon. Are there any hints of this in The Secret as it is published or the DVD as one might find it?
The only thing that you will find is buried in the acknowledgement, an obscure reference in the book edition, not in the DVD, in the book edition. You'll find an obscure reference to Jerry and Esther Hicks and Abraham. But we, of course, at Watchman Fellowship, we knew who Abraham was. We've been tracking the Hicks for years, and we saw that connection. Now, more recently, Oprah herself realized the connection. Oprah has done two programs on the Oprah Winfrey Show on The Secret. And in fact, had Rhonda Byrne on one of the programs, had Jack Canfield and other stars from the video of The Secret on the second program. But she did an entire month, or almost a whole month, later in the year on her XM satellite show, Oprah and Friends. And on that program, she actually acknowledged the role that Esther Hicks played as a channeler and brought her on the program, called her The Secret Behind the Secret, and actually allowed Esther Hicks to channel on the Oprah and Friends program on the XM satellite network.
No kidding.
Yes.
Let's talk about the fact that The Secret, at least in its latest manifestation, purports to be a scientific, in fact, it purports to be a sophisticated scientific approach to how the universe works and how the law of attraction works. How does it present itself in this way?
Well, it's very convincing. I mean, to watch the video, if you didn't know better, you know, it's like, they have these scientists on here making these claims. Now, what we did, we went back and put together a team of legitimate scientists to evaluate the scientific claims that were made. She says that modern science, particularly quantum physics, that deals with very small particles of atoms, like electrons, that the quantum physicists now agree that thoughts do become things, that they're able to demonstrate in a laboratory that by merely thinking thoughts, you are, at least on a subatomic level, you are changing matter. And so what we did is we first of all evaluated the claim. Most of the claims that are made scientific sound very credible, but they're not being made by scientists. You know, the people involved are authors like Jack Canfield, one guy, Bob Proctor, is touted as a philosopher, but he has no degree in philosophy. He just thinks deep thoughts. You got one's a feng shui consultant. You know, most of them are not scientists. However, interestingly, there are two scientists who have degrees in quantum physics and have taught on a university level, who are featured on The Secret. We went back and did background on both of these scientists and discovered that both have undergone a religious conversion that we believe and we document informs their statements. That what they're stating on here is not what they learned at the university. It's what they learned through their religious conversion. One of them, Fred Allen Wolf, earned Ph.D. in quantum physics after his conversion. His most recent book is titled The Yoga of Time Travel. And Dr. Wolf believes that we can, using the principles of yoga, actually go forward and backward in time. So the same scientist who is saying that the law of attraction is proven scientifically also believes in time travel. And the other scientist, the legitimate scientist who is featured in The Secret, Dr. John Hagelin. Dr. Hagelin teaches physics, and he does have a degree in physics, but he teaches at the Maharishi University in Fairfield, Iowa. He's a follower of the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who introduced a transcendental meditation to the United States. And also at the university, Hagelin not only teaches quantum physics, But he also teaches, or they have courses at the university, on flying without an airplane. They believe, and they have courses where they can, in three levels, hop, levitate, and actually fly around the room. And they have courses on that at the Maharishi University. So this is not mainstream science. In fact, one of our panel of scientists that we put together to evaluate the claims said not only is it not mainstream, it's not even the fringe, it's actually the lunatic fringe of science.
So is it a mischaracterization, and even though this is something like The Secret, I don't want to mischaracterize, is it a mischaracterization to say that what is being employed in the book and the DVD are perhaps the terms, some knowledge of the basics of quantum physics, or at least as far as we theorize about quantum physics, that are being misapplied to this theory about the universe and its ability to transform human thought into things and circumstances?
One of our experts that we brought on, Erica Carlson, who teaches quantum physics at Purdue University, she said she just believes that Rhonda Byrne isn't understanding what she's come across. That there is a statement amongst in quantum physics that basically says observer determines reality.
It's the uncertainty principle.
Yeah, right. And but that doesn't mean that when a scientist thinks thoughts that that's changing the outcome of the experiment. The very fact that the experiment itself causes a change in the atomic structure and the results of the experiment. So we go through on every one of the claims. Bob Proctor says there's enough energy, that everything is energy, and that there's enough energy in your body to power an entire city for almost a week. Our experts, one of them said, well, yeah, that's called nuclear fission, and there's a downside to tapping into that energy.
you tend to come apart at the atoms,
exactly,
or subatomic level, yeah. Okay, I guess let's go from the pseudoscience to what will be kind of a genuine and rather spooky spirituality. Near the end of your book, you talk about the real secret, the secret behind the secret, that maybe even some of the readers and observers of The Secret don't actually get, the sacred secret. What is it?
Todd, that was the surprising part. When I read the reviews in the Washington Post, New York Times, and the major reviews, some of them were positive and some were negative, but most of them missed the real secret. The real secret is not thoughts become things or the law of attraction. It's not about creating, you know, a new vacation or, you know, wealth or jewelry. The real secret, Rhonda Byrne saves that to the last section, and that real secret is about you. What she says is that we have greatly underestimated ourselves. And as the clip, I think you played part of the audio clip, she ends up saying that we are immortal, that we are energy, and energy cannot be created or destroyed. You are immortal. You are enlightened. In other words, that once you learn this Gnostic secret that she has, you have now opened up to all knowledge. And then the final part of the sacred secret, Rhonda Byrne clearly says that you are God. And you played that clip. You are God in a physical body. You are, you know, the universe, the sun rises and sets for you. The birds come out at night for you, come out and sing for you. Ultimately, you are God. And for students of the scriptures, you know, all this is frighteningly familiar because it's basically the same lies that were promised by the serpent in the Garden of Eden. When he told Eve, you will not surely die, that's the immortality part. Your eyes will be opened, that's the enlightenment part. And then the serpent says, you will be as God, knowing good and evil. And that's the same exact parallel that we're seeing in the final section of The Secret.
James, what do you say to somebody who's read the book, watched the DVD, they don't buy the last chapters or that, what they say, look, it works, that's all I know, and I'm just using, in kind of a mechanistic way, making my poster with my thoughts and my dreams and ambitions on it, concentrating every day on wealth and getting ahead and relationships and positive things. I'm just using it to make my life a little bit better. I don't buy Rhonda Byrne's spiritual view of human existence. What do you say to them?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm a positive thinker, and I don't think there's anything wrong with goal setting or using the mind to plan for the future. And being positive as Christians, you know, we have every reason to be positive in our outlook of the future. The problem is Rhonda Byrne goes way beyond positive thinking and to basically ascribing the attributes of deity to your own mind. And the concerns I have with that, first of all, it doesn't work. In our book, we give examples of Christian scientists who use the very same principles to receive healing, and they die, including their children, from very treatable diseases. We make that link. We give an illustration of a checkbook. Most of us have written checks with great intentions, just knowing in our hearts and being positive that the money was there. The person who received the check was equally positive and thankful and had a positive attitude. And then when you go to put the check in the bank, the teller takes it. Again, everybody's happy, the universe is in harmony, until the bank's computers get involved. And then the law of attraction is trumped by the law of subtraction.
We've got about 30 seconds here.
And so what ends up happening is you get a note of enlightenment from the bank saying that you really didn't have that much money in the account after all. So it really doesn't work, and ultimately it lets people in for heartache. Every promise that's made in the secret is genuinely delivered in the person of Jesus Christ.
James Walker is president of Watchman Fellowship, based in Arlington, Texas, and co-author of the new book, The Truth Behind the Secret. James, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks so much, Todd.
You know, not only is the truth of Jesus Christ the true promise here, but it gets everything where it belongs. You don't have to be God. Jesus is. And he is God crucified and risen for you. That you will never, ever get from the secret. And that, as I've said many times before, is no secret. Now, you can find out more about Watchman Fellowship. Just go to our website tonight, issuesetc.org. Look under the section titled Links, and you'll find a direct link to James Walker and Watchman Fellowship, issuesetc.org. Issues, etc. is underwritten in part by LCMS World Relief. Did you know that Southeast Asia is experiencing some of the worst flooding in recent memory? And that's saying something, folks. Well, Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief are on the front lines providing aid to the victims of these floods. Now, you can earmark a donation for these flood victims in Southeast Asia by calling 1-888-930-4438. Earmark your gift to Asia Flooding, Asia Flooding, 1-888-930-4438. Check out our homepage, issuesetc.org, Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief. Tomorrow, Stephen Parks on Faith Alone. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.